Special work session Tuesday, March 25th, 2014. City Manager Matthew Brower, Councilman Hilty, Councilman Oliver, our Mayor Kent Gwynn, myself, John McLeod, Council President, and Councilman Musley is here, just stepped out of the room. Mr. Brower, I turn it over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Council President. The first item on the work meeting agenda is the Historic Ocala Preservation Society regarding historic district. Pete, are we going to begin with a little presentation?
Yeah, I have a little oral presentation and a quick, we're just going to slide through for illustration of some of these.
If Council prepared, what I'll do is turn the time over to staff and you'll go ahead and run the presentation.
Okay. Peter Lee from Community Development. You should have a correspondence from the chairman of OPAB, and there's a communication with Councilman Musley that was actually the impetus for this meeting. There are several items that are outlined by specifically the chairman of OPAB, Mr. Smith. Staff has really concentrated more on the public improvements that we could possibly make and look at some of the issues throughout the district. I have a brief PowerPoint that I'm going to go through relatively quickly just to illustrate some of those, the problems and some of the places where we have done things that were improvements in the districts and where we have complete sidewalks and streets. So we're really limited more to the issues of sidewalks, lights, bicycle facilities, and connectivity, which is a big part of the 2035 plan. So we want to make sure that the Fort King District, the Ocala Historic District, is well connected internally to the places where people would most likely walk first, like the downtown and the schools, but then also look at the condition of the sidewalks and the lighting throughout the district. This is just a map, and it's a little hard to see probably for you. The black line is where we're missing sidewalk. We're missing sidewalk through significant portions of the historic district. Sometimes it's just not there. It could have been placed there, but in a development pattern and at the time that it was developed, it wasn't placed there. But a lot of times there are some reasons why sidewalk isn't there. Specifically, there are some grade issues as you move away from the street that would make it difficult to put sidewalks in. There are also some issues with oak trees on the canopied streets, especially Fifth Street, that don't make it impossible, but make it very difficult to put a sidewalk in some of those places. Additionally, we have a lot of times where we're constrained, the right-of-way is really tight, so we wouldn't be able to put the sidewalk in the right-of-way. We still, again, may be able to place right-of-way or sidewalk adjacent to the right-of-way, but we'd need to have some kind of an agreement with the property owner to get an easement for those sidewalks. In places we have complete sidewalks, and we've done some improvements on Fifth with the people from the neighborhood participating in putting the lights in, but we have sidewalks through a lot of the district that are in relatively good condition, some along Fort King, although Fort King there haven't been any upgrades, and there are some places where we have sidewalks that are in rough condition along Fort King. A lot of these areas where we have sidewalks on both sides. It's in varying conditions. And then we have areas where the sidewalk's missing. And again, some of these would be relatively simple to place sidewalks in an area like that one. It's close to grade, relatively level. We'd have to find out whether we had right-of-way available or not, but it would be relatively easy to put sidewalks through some of these areas. And then these areas that, you know, there are trees that are in the way, and we'd have to figure out how we would deal with those trees. Some of these streets through the district aren't heavily traveled. So sidewalks on one side of the street may be sufficient where they exist. And again, we have property line issues. We have improvements that have been placed by property owners to the right of way. And so that may affect our ability to simply put sidewalks in. In some places, the sidewalk here, we're standing, the photographer standing on the sidewalk and looking head, there's no sidewalk. Again, relatively close to grade. You can see some of the curb line issues that are maybe even bigger issues than some of the sidewalk issues. And in some places, trees are obviously a big impediment to sidewalks that would sit directly adjacent to the street. We would have to, again, work with property owners if it was a desire to put sidewalks through these areas. We'd have to work with the property owners to get easements to place those sidewalks on private property. And again, tree issues, and then some grade issues on places like 11th Avenue, where the grade, not only the grade of the street, but the grade going off of the street, you can see in this photo to the east edge of that right away, there's a severe grade change up, and then as you go farther to the south, there's a severe grade change off. So it'd be difficult to put a sidewalk in some of these areas. And again, people's improvements come right to the right-of-way lines. And if we were to put sidewalks on some of these streets, we would have to deal with those issues. And we have a lot of broken sidewalks to varying degrees, some that I think warrant consideration to go out there and fix them, and some of them are it looks like people who have done something that crossed the sidewalk and cracked pieces of the sidewalk as they were doing an improvement. Trees have caused a lot of uplift. These areas, this is on Fort King, and we actually, probably about a year ago, we did took a series of photographs up Fort King for a 2035 exercise. We know that we have a lot of impediments. We have a lot of curb issues and broken curb, varying heights. And we feel like this street, staff feels that this street really warrants at least taking a look at it. It's obviously a very important street. It leads right into the downtown and through the district. And also, the other thing to note is that this street from the south boundary of the right-of-way will be included in the proposed East CRA. So that's a possible funding source as we go down the road and look at possibly improving Fort King. And again, you know, we have places where the edge of the public area and private area is pretty well defined. We have some problems with trees, and then we have other areas where it's ill-defined, and we dirt out into the sidewalk, and we have a lot of broken curbs and low curbs and curbs that need to be rebuilt and fixed through Fort King, especially. A lot of these cracks, you see these everywhere, and a lot of times that's from some kind of a construction project that went on or something, and somebody drove across the sidewalk. And we have several impediments. We have poles, light poles, trees, signs at varying places through the district that run through the sidewalks. Even on 5th, you can see as you get to the end of the sidewalk, we've done some improvements here, but the power pole is dead center in the sidewalk. And some trees, you know, these would typically, the way to fix this would probably be to alter the path of the sidewalk a little away from the tree and reset those panels of the sidewalk. Same here, you'd have to move the sidewalk away from the tree to get that to level off. And we've done some streetscape improvements in the West District, in the downtown, and in the Tuscarawas District, using historic light, which is at the forefront of most of the improvements that we've made. But we've also done some intersection improvements. You also notice in the letter from Mr. Smith to you guys, there's the consideration of getting back to the brick streets, which is obviously going to be relatively expensive if we went down to brick streets. But in lieu of that, there may be some intersection improvements that we could do through the district at key locations on Fort King and maybe some of the other streets that are similar to the improvements we've made in the downtown with the bricked crosswalks or the pressed concrete sidewalk intersections. And, you know, we've done some streetscape improvements here. You'll notice that a lot of the photos that I showed through the district, there are a lot of the state of the grass between the sidewalk and the street is in varying conditions as you go through, some not so great. But like here at this intersection, we could do intersection improvements throughout some of the district. And that's it for our slides. Also, the bike facilities, we also address bicycle facilities. The TPO is in the middle of creating their bike ped master plan, and we will look specifically at what are the appropriate bicycle facilities through the historic district when we do that. Sometimes it's to create bike lanes. Sometimes on low traffic roads, it's simply to put up a sign that says share the road, and we put a bike facility, or we note that that's a bicycle facility that goes through the district on some of those streets. So there aren't a lot of opportunities for dedicated bike lanes through the district. There may be some on 5th or 8th, but I would imagine it would be pretty tight.
Okay. Pete, speaking of bikes, it seems to me, maybe this is in my TPO meeting, there was some discussion of running bike lanes along the rail bed coming out of downtown.
Yes.
Do you remember something like that?
Yes, we've discussed that with the TPO. Okay. Running them, actually doing, as opposed to rails, two trails, rails and trails, because the
right.
facility's wide enough to accommodate both the bike lane or bike path and the rail. So, yes, that's a possibility.
Which would connect eventually to?
Well, we would, my point of emphasis during those discussions was to make sure that everything, we're the crossroads in their bike bed plan, so that north, south, and east, west, we have a facility going out of a bike facility going out of the downtown, because we want to attract people. Eventually, to connect to Silver Springs, and the long-term dream to connect from Silver Springs to Mount Dora on that part of the trail, and then have some facility that connects back possibly to Santos. And they're exploring the possibility of adding paved trail to Santos that would connect to
right.
with Lacoochee.
Okay. Well, you stay on top of that one for us. And
okay.
Keep us updated. And I think it's imperative that we work on getting our biking, you know, where it can come out of the city and go to those places.
Yes.
Council members, do you have any questions or anything for Pete?
I just, on the way down here today, interesting to talk about bikes, as I was coming down Fort King where it narrows at 16th, there was a guy on a bike on my lane. Now, there's a sidewalk on the other side he could have rode on, but obviously he chose to ride in the street. So now I had to stop because of the oncoming traffic. There was not enough room, so I'm not sure how you educate the people when there's a sidewalk there to use that.
Well, yeah, he has the right to the street, but...
Yeah, I realize, but I mean, it was...
We have the other,
well, there,
it's right? one of the other options, and again, we're a little constricted in terms of width of the right-of-way in a lot of places, but we have used multi-use facilities in other places. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we'll have the opportunity necessarily to do that through the district, but
right.
there may be some place that we have the ability
but
to
just
do.
It would be safe for him to be on the sidewalk yeah. and in the street.
Well, I'll tell you why he probably does that, because occasionally I ride my bike, and sometimes the sidewalk's not near as safe as the road. Because, you know, you go over one of those little bumpy places and
Before
broken
cracks,
sidewalk,
yeah.
and you end up doing a little face plant.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm.
That's true, too. Any more questions for Pete?
Well, the only thing is the condition of some of the sidewalks. And is that something that we could look at getting in next year's budget?
Yeah, we talked to Public Works about that. But those, you know, when we went through it, just as community development staff, we thought that should be one of the priorities, is to go out and look at where those create some liability and
well,
some danger.
Well, especially the safety
fix
issues.
Those. Yeah. yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Definitely some places.
Yeah, and obviously, if we're going to be putting new sidewalks in, then I think you have to have the whole block is going to have to come together and say they want it. And
that's what we would look at is destinations and do we have heavily traveled areas where we're missing pieces of sidewalk that we really need into the
yeah.
network first, you know, prioritizing those. And then as we move east in the district, we have a lot of tree issues and a lot of impediments to place in sidewalks and some of those, and they're frankly there's less pedestrian traffic
yeah.
in those areas.
And of course the trees are one of the things that attracts people to the
right.
area as well. So
there's no more questions for Pete, I'll probably move on to public comment.
Thank you.
Public comment, let's try to keep it to a few minutes if we could. And remember to state your name and address when you come up. Jane Cosan, sorry.
Thank you so much for setting up the time to talk to the residents and concerned citizens of the Hocalis Historic District. This district is in great need of historic lighting being led from the downtown. Because of the fact that it's adjacent to the downtown district is so important for a viable downtown, which we're all just so happy that is coming along. And if we lead people by lighting and beautification, then they'll go downtown and they'll come to the district. Many cities have realized the importance of the adjacent historic district, and this is a treasure of Ocala's. Regarding brick streets, if we could do a block at a time, like Brandon did in Dunedin, it attracts people because they love the quaintness of it. And if we could get volunteer hours, the cost, for instance, in Brandon is how they did it, would be much less. And the liability and the openness of the districts is dependent on sidewalks. You know, it's a community mixed with elderly, young people, young children, and I see children playing in the streets, and it's just so dangerous. But to make our historic community of the downtown and the Ocala Historic District viable, we need that connection of the street lighting, of the brick, and the sidewalks so that it's available for visitors, residents, and the viability of both districts. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Dennis Phelps.
Morning. I live at 931 East Fort King Street. To me, one of the things that would be a great improvement to the historic district, especially as it relates to East Fort King Street, which is primarily a gateway to downtown, would be for the city to install some traffic control measures that would regulate the flow and speed of traffic down East Fort King Street. A couple of years ago, I submitted to the council a petition from the residents on the street for a stop sign, and the council politely listened to my presentation, and nothing was ever done. Traffic continues well over the speed limit during for that stretch of the street in the historic district, and something needs to be done. Like I said, I think I speak for every resident on the street. We're kind of sick and tired of the speeding traffic. A traffic study was done at the time back a couple of years ago, which confirmed the fact that motorists travel well above the speed limit.
I was just going to ask you, where do you live on Fort King? Give me a landmark.
It is the two-story stucco house with the ivy-covered wall.
Oh, okay.
In front.
Yeah. Over by Merritt Forrest's office.
Pardon?
Over by Merritt Forrest's office.
Yes, it's right there at the corner of 9th Terrace and 4 King Street.
Okay.
I might also add that on a regular basis, cars crash into the narrow median in front of my street. The accidents aren't reported to the police department, so that it goes unreported. But, I mean, all you have to do is check with your traffic department and see how often they have to come out and replace. There's some yellow reflector signs at each end of the median.
Yeah, I remember a number of years ago when Mike Amston was on city council, someone had asked to put, you know, kind of calm that traffic down, and that's, I think, what our solution was, to put that little median in there.
It just doesn't do the job.
It doesn't slow it down.
I can't tell you that specifically that a stop sign is the solution, or a speed hump, or, as the gentleman suggested, maybe some brick pavers at intersections. Maybe that would do the job. I'd certainly be in favor of that.
Well, one of the things here is talking about brick streets restored over time in our little, you know, item here. I mean, the bricks are underneath all that asphalt,
right?
So the bricks are there, and that's a great traffic calming device.
Oh, it's an excellent calming device. But when I presented my petition for the stop sign before, the city's response was that they want East Fort King Street to function as a high-speed traffic corridor, as an alternate to Silver Springs Boulevard. Hey, I understand that, but that's not what the residents want. We want a community. And to have that traffic speeding through our neighborhood is not acceptable.
Right. I agree.
Please help.
Is there room for one of those signs or whatever where they monitor the traffic, they post your speed on there, that maybe as an attempt to put that down there? I'm not sure there's enough room, though.
Yeah, I mean, you could, but I mean, you could also simply put a stop sign there. Mm-hmm. You know, staff will tell you it's not warranted, but most of the stop signs around the city aren't warranted, but we just do them.
Well, you know, when I was here before presenting the petition, somebody made the comment that a stop sign there would be an inconvenience. Every stop sign in town is an inconvenience for somebody.
Right. You're right.
So like I said, I'm not sure what the solution is. Maybe reduce the posted speed limit, although I kind of think that maybe that wouldn't work. People regularly ignore the posted speed limit now, so I just respectfully request that you do something.
Okay.
Thanks, sir.
Mr. Mayor, I wasn't here. Why did we put the
median
in the middle? Yes, I've hit.
Yeah, that was when Councilman Amson was here. Someone called him and said, hey, could you do something to slow the traffic down there? And our solution to that was put that median in there so you'd slow down when you got there. And obviously, it hasn't slowed it down. You just line your car up there.
Yeah, and if you miss, you hit it.
Yeah, you miss, you hit it.
It seems like, I mean,
it slows me down, I tell you that.
Well, after you hit it once, yeah.
I've never hit it.
Yeah.
Traffic, I'm not a traffic engineer, but it seems like a speed bump would probably be the best of both worlds to slow people down.
The brick pavers would even be better, because that's more in tune with the whole concept of downtown. A speed bump is...
Yeah, and you're talking about the entire length of Fort King. It's not just one intersection.
Yeah.
And staff, if I recall, 1 or 2 years ago, based on, I think, your request, if I remember correctly, did a warrant study.
And here it is.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They're going to tell you it's not warranted.
Just confirming that what everybody already knows,
right,
that the traffic speeds during that stretch of road.
Right. Yeah.
If council's interested, our traffic engineer and experts here, he can maybe talk a little bit about what staff investigated and what results were, if council so chooses.
Sure. Sure.
Don't you get through public comments?
Yeah, let's get through public comments first.
Sure.
Okay. Next we have Ted, and I cannot.
It's Ted Smith.
Ted Smith. That's an M? That is an M, isn't it? Ted Smith.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ted.
All right, Ted.
Don't forget the name address.
Ted Smith, 5000 Southwest 63rd Loop, and president of Ocala Historical Preservation Advisory Board. And a few things I wanted to say. One is that the board is really a good board. I think you'd be pleased. I certainly am proud to be a part of it. And I think we have a good board, a committed board that wants to help you with the historic district. Some of the items that have already been mentioned by Pete, as far as the considerations of the board. The historic district is just a garden of historic treasures, which has already been spoken about. Anything that can be done as far as basic maintenance and restoration and upgrading would be, I think, beneficial to the whole area, just to make it clean and pristine. And I think an overall master plan of doing that and perhaps incorporating some of the ideas of brick streets, you know, whether you have brick streets or can't afford brick streets, maybe that's just too much to do. Perhaps you do intersections, but have a master plan of doing that so that you can really define the historic district, and so there's some rhythm and enhancement of the whole area when you're doing that, rather than just taking a street and saying, okay, let's do this street or let's do that street. As far as one other item, I think, I don't know if Pete mentioned this or not, but as far as travel funds for OPAB members and a city council member to attend the annual Florida Trust Conference, that is has been a valuable resource. And if you would consider helping to fund that, to get one of our members and one of you to actually attend that, so that we can get new ideas and just build the enthusiasm on the board to help with that cause. But in any case, I really appreciate, our board appreciates your being here and having this workshop for the historic district. Thank you very much.
Mr. Brower, you know, I don't know what the rest of council thinks, but I think it probably would be a good idea for to have that funded if we could.
It'd be easy to price out and right in the middle of the budget preparation for next year. So if council desires, we could certainly program that.
Yeah, we are putting it in our 2015 budget. Perfect. And we've had it in the past when we did back a few years ago when we started with the budget cuts. We started had a cut some of the board, some of the historic meetings back. I don't think staff has went to one of the historic meetings in the last 2 or 3 years. So that's one of the ones we had to lose. And council did, there was a number of council members that did go to the historic preservation conferences, which are great conferences, but because of the staff cuts, we have reduced that. But we did put it in for this 2015.
How much are you putting in?
What?
How much are you putting in?
For one member of staff and one member of the usually it was the president of the board. Mm-hmm. And then city council could fund it through their process, through their budget.
Sounds like Councilman Musley. Great, volunteer.
Hopefully it'll be in Hawaii.
Okay, let's move on. Suzanne
That's a
Thomas,
joke, Sue.
Please.
May I allow Colleen Roman to go in my place and reserve if there's time it allows me?
Of course, Suzanne.
Thank you.
Come on. Just state your name and address for the record book.
My name is Pauline Lenemond. I live at 835 Southeast 3rd Street. As a resident of the Ocala Historic District since 1999, and also as a board member of HOPS, I would like to thank Councilman Musley for acknowledging my concerns and helping to initiate this meeting. I'd also like to thank City Council for your time and for recognizing the importance of needed improvements to and the promotion of this gem of an area and the financial benefits it will bring to downtown and the city of Ocala. I hope you've all read the letter I wrote to Councilman Musley in October stating my feelings and observations over the years I have resided in the historic district. While the city has done a great job in the other historic districts, there has been nothing done in my neighborhood that I'm aware of. I'm really excited about what I heard today, but it's the first I've heard of this. In the 14 years that I've lived there, I've seen nothing done at all. And I just think that we're entitled to the same improvements like decorative lighting and sidewalks as the other districts. After all, we are the only district that will bring tourist dollars to Ocala. People will come to visit a beautiful historic district and then stroll downtown for shopping and lunch. Across the country, urban downtown renewals have been extraordinarily successful when the adjoining historic districts were given the attention they deserve. While the financial benefit revitalization of this area will bring to downtown is extraordinary. My biggest concern is the safety of our children. We are an urban neighborhood with neighborhood schools. Isn't it nice that we have a community that kids can still walk to school in? Sadly, many of the streets have no sidewalks. Many of the existing sidewalks are so overgrown and impassable, or the concrete is broken and uneven. Pass through this area anytime during the day or evening. Students are walking to school, people are power walking on their lunch breaks, seniors are walking their dogs, families are strolling after dinner. Takes you back, doesn't it? Well, when my son attended Osceola Middle School, he had to walk in the middle of the street to get there. HOPS has put together a list of improvements that would greatly enhance both the historic district and the downtown area. Some things are very simple and I know can be accomplished quickly. Cleaning the decorative street signs is a start. Have you seen them? Some of the signs you cannot even read the street names. Pressure cleaning the sidewalks and adding some decorative landscaping would be immediate improvements. Of course, we would like the decorative lighting throughout the district. Currently, it is only on 5th Street, and I believe the residents had to participate in the cost. Was that the case in the Tuscarawas and West End districts? Did those residents have to contribute to the cost? Bigger projects include sidewalks, and of course, we would love to see the brick streets restored. I believe most of the streets have bricks under the asphalt. This would truly transform the neighborhood, and it would calm traffic. Really reaching for the moon? First, special tax district. Keep our tax dollars in our neighborhood to improve our neighborhood, which will in fact benefit the entire city. Second, zoning changes. Allow townhomes. They can be built to be aesthetically pleasing and blend into the area. Once again, look at successful downtown renewals and you will see the residential areas building townhomes. This will bring more residents and younger residents into the area. People want to live here, but not everyone can maintain these older homes. Take it from me, they're pretty expensive. Let's restore our past and blend it with the future for an area to be enjoyed by all. I am begging you to stop ignoring us and be proactive in saving and improving this unique and very special area. Ocala is so very fortunate to have this asset and these beautiful homes. It will be a real tragedy for it to continue to decline. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Brower, you're making a list of...
I've got a running list, yes.
I thought you had. Well, I mean, because some of the things that they're asking for that we can very easily
yes.
do. Laura Bradford? Address, please, Laura.
Good morning. I live at 222 Southeast Winona Avenue. I've been in Winona Avenue for 14 years, moved here from North Carolina, wanted to live in a wonderful place in Florida, used to live in Orlando back in the 80s, didn't want to live in Orlando, didn't want to live in Tampa, didn't want to live in a big city. Rick said, we need to go to Ocala. I went one year of school there. This is the place we need to be. So we bought a house in the historic district. Love it. Love the fact that I can walk to downtown, have some dinner, listen to some music if I can ever get a Saturday night to remember that there's music now on the square. I seem to be missing it all. There's lots of culture here in our area. Pauline, I've lived in the neighborhood for 14 years, haven't seen anything done except this past week they're putting in some sidewalks on the corner of 2nd and Winona and down 2nd. I think maybe there's some water issues or something. As I was walking here today, a gentleman who was doing some stuff, I asked him about what he was doing and he said, I think there's water issues. But anyway, I agree with everything. I'm a member of HOPS. I'm the webmaster of HOPS. We are watching this historic district go back down into the 80s. When Rick lived here in the 80s, he's like, that side of the historic district was a downtrodden place. Nobody wanted to live there. It was full of bad things and falling down homes, but now it's come back and we love it. We love our neighborhood and we want our neighborhood to stay a place that people want to come and say, wow, this is like Savannah. Wow, it's kind of like Charleston. Woo, this is a great place. We have it right here. We just hope that you can continue to help our historic district stay up above and bring people to our area. Thank you for your time and energy.
Thank you. Maria and Bob Schmidt, Seven Sisters Inn. I need your address, please.
Yeah. I'm Maria Schmidt, and this is Mike and Bob from the Seven Sisters Inn, 828 East 4th King Street. Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to present our concerns and our appreciation for all that has happened here in the city of Ocala with the development and the reopening of the Seven Sisters Inn. And I also want to thank COPS for the support they've given, not just the inn, but the historic district and its residents. We're invested as residents of the historic area. We're also invested as business people. We're also invested showing our passion and our vision and our zealousness for developing the East 4th King Street by actually starting a small alliance called the East 4th King Merchant Alliance. The reason we're doing that is, even though some people say what merchants and what East 4th King, is because there is quite an opportunity to develop this area to increase additional funding for the city of Ocala. We have invested ourselves in bringing an old building back, and we've been successful with it. We bring stories back from the guests that come to visit the Seven Sisters Inn, not because they're coming to visit Ocala, but because they're going to stay in a beautiful, old, restored, historic building. There's a lot of those people out there. The difference between us and Savannah and all these lovely icons out there, that I consider us a crown jewel in the city of Ocala. We are the icon of the city of Ocala. We are what used to be the city of Ocala, what brought the strength to the Ocala district. Every home speckled in the historic district is a story behind the growth and the prosperity of Ocala, and it needs to be preserved. We witness time after time people coming through our doors and not knowing our history, not understanding the representation there. And they're eager to know, they're eager to discover, yet there's a lot of impediments that value this. So we actually are invested in this area. We want to bring it forth. There's so much we can do. One thing that is missing here, and everybody described it, the sidewalks, the brick pathways, the lights, etc. It's all called branding. And in the business world, branding is what brings in revenue. We're not branded. We're not branded as a historic district. We need to brand ourselves, bring exposure to the world. I can get my rooms filled. I can provide more taxation for the city of Ocala. I want to increase your revenues through our efforts at the Seven Sisters Inn. I can't do that with empty rooms. You cannot increase your property values without all these small investments that it requires for the city to come up. It is a crown jewel. We're not there yet. But my God, what a missed opportunity if we don't take these actions. We also want to address the speed zone. We live on 4th King, our business is on 4th King, and we have an issue with the zone, with the basically unregulated speed zone in 4th King.
Just briefly, you know, we're not here to demand anything. We just want to bring some attention, like everybody else does, to the area. I think if we could address one of the pictures that Pete brought up was right next door to us, which is now Rick Perry's office. The first thing when our folks leave and this kind of nice weather and they want to walk downtown, which is a little bit of a hike, but a lot of them like to do it, they're confronted with going out our driveway and hitting some really nasty upheaved sidewalks right there. And you know, that's kind of like a first impression thing. I think also, I don't want to be inappropriate in a meeting like this, and at some point I would like to have a conversation with the right people. We have problems across the street from us at a housing complex right there. I think all of you know who that is. I've got police reports about things that have gone on there since we've been there the last 17 months. Went down and got copies. There's things that we need to address there. But generally speaking, what we want to draw attention to is the fact that it's a cooperative effort between us and the city. Yes, we are bringing people in, but we're also, there are people that want to come downtown that are discovering us. It works both ways. So we want to just be connected to the downtown. We want to be included in what the downtown has. And we want the improvements for the historic district as a whole I can't tell you the number of people that come to our place percentage-wise, because I don't have an exact figure, but percentage-wise, pretty high, that want to just go for a run, go for a walk. Well, I send them down to the first traffic light, which is 11th Street. They don't have it. They don't have sidewalks. So, you know, we're kind of like playing with, we'll go back to 5th and go back 5th and down and go around to 8th and run around downtown, or they want to take walks or whatever. So there's just a lot of interest in the, we can tell you that from experience, there's a lot of interest in the historic nature of what's right behind us and right around us. So we just want to see what we can to get improvements.
We've been very blessed. And that's through the efforts of the community embracing us, the city of Ocala embracing us, and all the hard, blessed sweat and tears we have done to restore the Seven Sisters Inn. We are the only lodging facility in the city, in the entire city, that is 5 stars with TripAdvisor. We are very proud of that. The only time that we get a 4-star, you know what category it is? And you're going to cringe when you hear this, location. What does that tell us? That they came over to see the Seven Sisters Inn. They gave us 5 stars. They stepped outside of the Seven Sisters Inn, and they gave it a 4. I want us to be a 6, a 10. We have the opportunity. We are a crown jewel. All of us here are stakeholders. We have put in our trust and our money and our hopes for this city. This is such a turnaround. This is a turnaround opportunity that it will come back as an investment. See the speckled businesses along East Fort King opening up their doors. Cha-ching, sales tech. Succinct, cha-ching, more of the traveler's taxation that we contribute. It's not going to go to waste. And by the way, it's going to make us all proud of living in Ocala, which is what we're here for.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Would you want to wait? Or you want to address the?
Yeah, I'll
wait till you're done. Pauline?
Yes.
You've already spoke.
Oh, I already spoke.
Okay, I'm sorry.
He liked it so much.
Back to Suzanne.
I got plenty more to say.
Sorry. I read them off. Suzanne, did you have anything you wanted to add? Or? Okay. Suzanne Thomas.
For those that know me, 3 minutes is just really not enough for me. But I would like to say that I helped start this all of the historic districts in Ocala. And starting back in the early 80s, from Winona to Wautula, the city had designated that area as a blighted area. And through the formation of Historic Ocala Preservation Society and the residents and citywide, we were able to really turn that around. And for those of you that are perhaps too young to really remember how it was when it was back in the 80s, it's just despicable. So I think that we've come a long way, and I think that through Hops's efforts to bring recognition to the historic district, we funded the survey for the downtown historic district. We revitalized and did a house in the Tuscaloosa historic district. We gave the city the gazebo, trying to tie the city downtown district into the Ocala Historic District. It's all one area. We have helped fund Mount Zion Church's repairs, the city gates, and many things, and there's a list I think that y'all have. But what we would really appreciate, whatever could be done, and the decorative lighting visually as you leave downtown, and you see the flags and the lights, and when they stop, you think that's the end, if you're a visitor or not that familiar with Ocala. And this extends it so that it brings the whole area together. And we appreciate anything that you could do. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I'd like to say something, Suzanne.
Okay.
Thank you for that compliment, Suzanne, that I'm too young to remember.
Mr. Brower?
Yes, Yes, sir.
List of a lot of things there. Is there any way someone on staff could put together a plan of attack that we could take care of the immediate needs and then also work on in the future everything from sidewalks to everything else that's on the list?
Of course. As I've jotted down notes, I've kind of been kind of working with the data. What I see is you got a maintenance issue of some things, mm-hmm. and those things can be addressed fairly easily.
Right.
I know right now we spend, I think, Darren, if I'm wrong, please correct me, about I think it's $500,000 a year on maintenance of sidewalks, curbs, and gutters. And, of course, we have to focus throughout the entire city, so we do that. But we can address the maintenance issues fairly readily. Pressure washing the street signs, I think it's an easy order. The other category, of course, is improvements. Improvements to sidewalks, street lights, scratching off the asphalt and revealing, of course, the concrete. For me, the first thing is, where is it possible to do those things at? As you saw in Pete's presentation, in some areas it may not be possible. For example, with areas that got slopes, areas where you got maybe historic trees, you may not want to put a sidewalk in. And of course, where it's desired. You may have streets where property owners may not want it. And you may want to be mindful of some of their ideas or vision as well. And so I think in terms of improvements, what we need to do is put a team together, identify what's possible, what's desired, begin pricing it, and then lay out a plan over a certain number of years where we can pay with what we can afford over a reasonable number of years and go after it.
Okay.
Good question. Talk about the decorative street lights. Several people have brought it up to me. I mean, I know we've got some decorative street lighting in Tuscarawas and the west side. How was that paid for? And because I know how the Fifth Street was paid for by the property owners, if I'm not mistaken. Just address that, please.
Absolutely. Let me invite.
I'll answer the question. We have decorative street lights in the three other districts: the downtown Tuscarawas and West Ocala. And kind of just give you a little funding history of it. For West Ocala, the council back in 2002, 2003, because there was a lot of infrastructure problems, not just street lighting, they dedicated $500,000 to the general fund to upgrade the infrastructure, which included the new street lights. Tuscarawas, we did some recently with the Operation Tuscarawas dollars out of the 1/8 mil. But in the past, we also did the original ones back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And that came out of general fund dollars that we, in working with Electric, got out of Electric's budget. So that's how the street lighting got for Tuscarawas. And then downtown, we have done it through grants, through DOT, and through enhancement funds through the TPO. So that's how we got some of the street lights. But yeah, I mean, we've put a lot of dollars, and then recently the $200,000 for the West Ocala improvements right outside of the district along MLK. So there's been a lot of dollars dedicated to those three districts because there was a lack of infrastructure and some needs in that area. But yes, no dollars have been set aside for the Ocala district in years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think several of residents brought up the fact that if you extend the decorative lighting, it just basically extends downtown and gives a continuity, and I can certainly buy off on that argument and would encourage us to try to find a way to get some dollars to over years,
Right, and we are looking at through the TPO, since we've finished this portion of Fort King, to try to go through the district, and so that's something that we may get an enhancement grant for that.
Okay.
If not, then that portion, like Pete mentioned, is going to be in the new CRA, which would be a dedicated funding source. Okay. But the historic district just has not had a dedicated funding source in the last 15 years for any really true infrastructure improvements other than general maintenance.
We did partner with, I think it was on Fifth Street, residents there on those decorative lights. Mike, would you mind coming up and speaking very quickly on that?
Yeah, I'll talk about it. It was Augie Griner. I was talking to Augie about, it's real dark on the streets. He said, well, why don't we get, some street lights there? So we went to the property owners along Fifth Street, had, dinner or whatever at Dr. Cannon's house one night. And I think it was something like $60,000. And I think the residents paid $30,000 of it. And the city paid,
It was about,
I think it was $40,000 that the residents paid. It was about $100,000 for our part of it. That's all the underground, the labor and everything to install it.
So anyway, that's how the lights on Fifth Street got done. There's a sign down at the end of Fifth Street that talks about, you know, how it happened. So that's why they have lights on Fifth Street, because of Augie Kreiner. Big Aug.
Mike, can you take just a moment and talk about the pricing and how that was partnered in terms of the stakeholders?
The total cost to do the project was about $140,000. And the residents, I think, through the historic district paid for about $40,000 of that. And then the utility funded the remaining $100,000, and that paid for the underground lines and the labor to install those lights.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, the $40,000 was the cost of the lights themselves.
Okay. Yeah, so you've talked about West Ocala, there's $500,000 for that. Tuscaloosa, you know, none of the residents paid anything, you know, for those. So, you know, I mean, they have a good point. You know, why are they paying for, you know, their lights? So let me just say a couple of things. The brick streets, the bricks are underneath the asphalt. Great thing that we didn't, you know, pull those out and throw them away when we paved over the streets. You know, Pauline talked about townhomes. Yeah, I mean, that would make sense. You go to a lot of these historic cities like D.C. and Georgetown and Brooklyn, and, you know, all those, they've all got townhomes. Somebody else talked about different historic districts, you know, like the Garden District in New Orleans, you know, in Charleston and all those. Yeah, it's a destination. People come to see the historic districts. You know, one of the reasons we've got a neighbor across the street here at IHMC is because they stayed at the Seven Sisters Inn when they came to Ocala. And Dr. Ford, you know, loved Ocala. That's how he fell in love with Ocala, staying at the Seven Sisters Inn on the way to the Daytona, to the races. You know, I think it would be a good, like, you know, some folks have said, and it was maybe in some comments here, is to master plan the historic district so that we know exactly what needs to be done, the sidewalks, the bricks, the lighting, you know, everything, and just, you know, allocate, you know, the money for it, make it a priority, because, you know, back in the 80s, you know, some council members wanted to just bulldoze the thing down. It was blighted and just get rid of it. And thank God we didn't do that. It's a great, great area, one of the best, you know, in the city. And, you know, our idea with the bringing residential downtown is to simply take what's there, just simply bring it across the street and tie all of that in to the downtown and just keep it flowing through here. And it makes perfect sense. And that's what we've always talked about doing with the, developing the downtown. So, I mean, I'm glad that, you know, Councilman Musling, you know, got us to this point where we're doing this, workshop. And I think we need to really, really give some attention, you know, to one of the nicest areas in our community, and especially what it means to, what it will mean and does mean now to downtown.
It lends itself really to making Ocala a destination. If we're going to go forward with hotels and things of that nature, it really is something that needs to be proactive with.
Mm-hmm. You know, from my standpoint, you know, getting that master plan that staff could put together for us and coming up with a funding source of some sort. And I would imagine, you know, I live just outside the historic district, so at least I understand the mentality of the neighborhood. Most of the people would, if there's a funding source, they would probably be willing to kick in also and for the improvements. And it, to some degree, to even enhance it even further. So if we can find a funding source to do as much as possible and, you know, maybe more on top of that.
Cool, absolutely.
Can I mention one thing I failed to address earlier? Was, and I'll always say women, I promise. Kimmy with Horse Carriage Tours, you all know her. She's an icon in the historic area. She will not go down Fort King because of safety issues.
So if we're going to, you know, just keep in mind, I keep using the word branding, but that's essential here in order to establish all the goals that we have. But that's another safety issue that, because of the traffic on Fort King, think about all the properties that Savannah, Charleston, the Georgetown area has, the horse carriage rides, one day maybe the little trolleys, and then the pedestrian trafficking and the gazing of the historic area all have to come together when we make this plan.
Yes,
thank
ma'am.
You.
We're going to have council look at Fort King and see what we can do for the yeah. road itself. I mean, I think that's at least, you know, everyone that's sitting here today, that's everyone's agenda. Go ahead. Did you?
You know, I've been listening and hadn't said too much. But I think you're all preaching to the choir up here. We're all for Fort King in the district. Especially there's three of us or four of us that were born and raised here in Ocala. And we knew it when it had brick streets, and I still have a lot of blood and skin on Fort King. But I was born on Fort King. And I'm all for it. And Matt, is there any way we can start on a maintenance just to get some of these sidewalks straightened out a little at a time, you know?
Absolutely. I think, like I said, on the street signs, getting the pressure washed, that's a no-brainer. It's easy.
But some of the sidewalks you can tear out, some of the things.
Yeah, some of that work's been ongoing last year, too. I know the staff did some last year, doing some more work this year. You heard some testimony to that effect. It's also just identifying where the needs are and prioritizing those needs and going after it. If I may, with council's permission, let me suggest that staff be given a couple months to look at the requested improvements, see if we can't maybe identify where they're at, what they would look like, put a price tag to that, and then during your budgetary work meetings this summer, bring that back, kind of show it to you, and then you can weigh out those costs with the other demands that you're going to have as you try to get a balanced budget.
And you, and take care of the immediate needs now,
the maintenance
stuff,
needs, absolutely.
Maintenance needs, and come back
and there are some bad
inside June or something.
I beg your pardon.
2 months, say June.
The maintenance needs we can begin almost immediately.
But the rest of it,
we'll come back during the workshops.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, and I bet the historic district can, just as they've done, can tell you exactly where, you know, the problems are.
Absolutely.
And let's get maybe. The HOPS board can give us their list of priorities also to
absolutely.
Make sure that they're
the eyes and ears.
Ours are jiving with theirs.
Yeah.
So, I think they had that.
Councilman Musselman.
But I think our ultimate goal is to have a master plan similar to the Tuscarawas master plan. Okay. I can't believe we don't have a master plan. I mean, this the historic district is it's Ocala. It's Ocala. It's where Ocala started at.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we owe it to us to have a master plan, and you know, I'd like to have that in place at some point in time as the ultimate goal.
Let us in conjunction with the other work that we'll do, let us identify some alternatives for doing that master plan in-house, doing outsource to the contractor, or bring those recommendations back as well during the work meetings, and you can look at that.
Okay.
Well, we just need to simply tell staff that's what you want done, and just tell them to do that.
I think that's what we just did.
Okay, I know, but he's talking about some alternatives and this, that, and the other.
No, I think the alternatives of how it's going to be put in place, whether it's by staff or whether by a private contractor.
Yeah, we could do that.
At least that's what I understood you said.
Yeah, and of course, you've got to weigh out the funding. We're in a significant deficit environment, and so you've got to weigh out your priorities. So we could go do it, but there's going to be a price tag to it.
Yeah.
And last but not least, the issue across the street from Seven Sisters, I assume there's an issue. I've heard that there's an issue. Maybe someone can look
ask
into
a question?
That.
Can we ask a question to clarify that issue, if you don't mind?
Is that a law enforcement issue?
Is that a nuisance, or is that law enforcement?
I mean, if it's a law enforcement issue and you don't want to talk about it in public, I can to you about it.
Jennifer Burke, 805 East Fort King Street. I am completely surrounded by the property across from Seven Sisters Inn. I had a bullet come through my window at 1 o'clock on a Saturday. I had customers and children in my store. Yes, they were arrested with heroin, intent to sell methamphetamines, resisting arrest with violence. They hid the gun on the property. Just on my birthday on January 25th, my fence was set on fire, almost set my house on fire. That cost about $300 to repair. The window was about $300 to repair. Their trees from their property were on my house, which they set the tree on fire. So it was $1,300 to cut their trees off of my house so they don't set it on fire again.
Jennifer, are these the small brick
Motown
buildings?
Motown Apartments.
Okay. Motown Apartments. You know the address?
I don't know the address. They're next to me and behind me.
And these are the brick, the brown brick?
Yeah. The little brick buildings, yeah.
It's called, it used to be called the Grubbs.
It's yeah. Called okay. Motown.
M-O- the Grubbs, it used to be called, yeah. That's,
what was it called, Ty?
The Grubbs, that's what the Grubbs, they used to okay. call it.
Who owns it, Ty?
I've been told some wealthy people.
Yeah, I think it's been out of town, I thought it was.
I didn't live in Ocala to know what was going on, but they do.
Okay, well.
So law enforcement.
Yeah, we'll get the process over.
It'll get some attention.
Thank you.
And maybe we can get the chief to set up some traffic stuff on Fort King in the interim.
Yeah, anything that, yeah. Just I'm not going to tell you what we're going to do. But.
No, I.
But yeah, we'll do something.
Just to let you know, yes, staff is working on the East Ocala Community Plan, which would be the historic district would be a subset of that. So that is moving forward. And I think we gave a presentation back in the fall a little bit about how we're starting that process. And that would be, the plan was to do it in-house and not with a planning consultant like we did with West Ocala.
Can we have the subset finished first?
Yeah. I mean, well, and it'd be the bigger part of it, yes. Subset, and I think we, I mean, first thing is to maybe hold some meetings with HOPS. In addition to the into the historic board, but also get out into the community.
I think in your words, core moving out.
Yeah.
So, okay. Any further comments, council members? Real quickly.
I'm going to make it really quick, almost without any words.
I need your name and address again.
Ira Hoagland, 89 Southeast 8th Street. Two things to say. First of all, as you know, I've been before council lots of times over the years for the historic district. I've thanked you and thanked you and thanked you. I'm looking forward to coming back 5 years and thanking you again as a result of the community and the city coming together. And my second point is a special attention about brick streets being restored. Okay, it's happening in Tarpon Springs. It's happening in Dade City. It's happening in Sanford, especially right now. It's happening in Winter Park. Is happening in Orlando. Orlando has 55 miles of brick streets. Okay, and here's your handout. That's what teachers do.
Dr. Schwank, did you have something you wanted to say real quick?
No. Not the first time you gave me a handout.
Well, not the last time either.
And this will be the, we need to finish up after okay. Dr. Schwank.
Good. I have nothing but good vibrations, and it's great to see so many people on council concerned and committed, okay? And the next step is what we've talked about is coming up with some kind of comprehensive plan, whatever you call it, okay, with some deadlines and some funding. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Dr. Schwank, we'll finish up with you.
Thank you very much for your attention. My name is Gordon Schwank at 1009 Southeast 3rd Street on the corner of 3rd Street and 10th Avenue. My wife Lois and I and our family have lived there since 1989. Actually, we bought it in 89, renovated it till 91. But anyway, we've seen in the fairly recent past, due to some economic downturns, a number of foreclosed homes in the district that have not been maintained, that have not been cared for. There have been squatters in some of them and so forth. And this is a shame. I mean, it's really a shame to let this kind of thing happen. I don't know what can be done about it, but also, some of those properties have not been properly maintained. There's yard waste and there's debris and fallen trees and so forth that have just gone there unattended for quite some time. So as part of cleaning up the district, if code enforcement or somebody could look at these things and say, gee, there's piles of rubbish and trees and so forth that have been there for a long time, somebody has to clean that up. I'm not sure whose job it is, but you know, they should get after whoever is responsible for those properties. That's all. Okay.
Thank you. Sure, Chip will be very happy to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Any further comments?
Just one last, really it's more of an observation. You know, I've been up here 2 years now and sat through a lot of these things. There's been many a workshop, quite a few council meetings, where the only people in the audience are the city staffers. You can see the passion out there. This audience is filled with people that live in the area, own property in the area, and want to see it improved. And I'm proud of it, proud of Ocala.
Okay. Nothing further?
We have one other item on the agenda.
What did I mess here?
This is the business tax presentation.
Oh, I'm sorry. Councilman Musley.
So the audience is certainly welcome to stay. We certainly love to have you. Next item on the agenda is a business tax presentation.
I have to leave now.
Okay. Staff has given this presentation twice. I've asked staff to have it back on the agenda. We'll give just a couple minutes transition.
Jay. Now everybody leaves. I'll take care of that.
This is engaging talking.
Yeah, I'll take care of that. Thanks, Jason.
This is for me?
Come on.
Okay.
Hey, Ty. Ty.
I'm very brief.
Okay.
Would you like me to go ahead and start?
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm Patty Hitchcock.
Hold on one sec. Pete, could you close that back door for us?
I'm Patty Hitchcock. I'm manager of the One Stop Permit Center, and as part of my responsibilities for the city, and that relates to permitting and business licensing for the city. I've been asked to... I've been asked to give you a brief presentation on business taxes as they relate to insurance companies that do not have offices within the city. And out-of-town insurance companies doing business within municipal limits may be assessed business taxes pursuant to federal, state, and local regulations. The Florida League of Cities initiated a business tax collection program in 1951. There are 289 municipalities within the city that are participating with the league, and of the 85 largest cities in the state, only Ocala and the city of Doral do not participate. This table shows you the last 4 years of revenue collected by the League of Cities. Actually, the league has collected over $2 million annually, but in that first year, the collections are shared 50-50 between the municipality and the League of Cities. After the first year, the city would then have added that company to its list of businesses within the, doing business within the city limits, and they would be invoiced directly, and so the proceeds would then be 100% to the city, nothing to the league. The league experience is that there are about 300 to 400 companies operating within the average city. So in order to estimate what that revenue would be to the city, if each insurance company were to pay a $75 business tax, which is similar to what the insurance agents in town are paying, with 300 companies, that would be a little over $20,000. So to be conservative, we rounded down. So that could be $20,000 per year. It could be more. So I think the most important thing is, how does this work? Each insurance company would only purchase one business tax certificate, no matter how many policies were sold within the city limits. So
As an example, if State Farm sells 300 policies in the city, 1,000 policies within the city, they're paying $75. That's it. This is similar to what an insurance agent would pay. The insurance agents in town are paying $75 for their business tax certificate. But in addition to that, the local business people are paying rent, paying property taxes, paying utilities. They're also hiring people. They're employing people. And the playing field is not level for them right now. I mean, we all know we have so much access now. The local business people are in competition with the global market. So I can talk to my agent that perhaps has been helping me with my insurance needs for years, but I can also go online and shop Progressive or Geico, any other insurance company, and perhaps acquire my insurance from them, and they're not paying the $75. So we were looking at this as a way of leveling the playing field. All of our local business people are in competition with the global market. And it's not just the insurance companies. If I want to purchase something, I can go to overstock.com and buy whatever I want, or Amazon and buy whatever I want. And quite often the shipping is less than it would cost me in gas to drive and buy it. And I don't have to pay sales tax. They have lower overhead, so I can get a better deal. There isn't anything we can do about that inequity with the sales tax. That's not something the city has the authority to address. But the federal and state regulations have given us the authority to address it as it relates to the insurance companies. And it's $75 a company. We've contacted other cities, and they haven't had the experience of any pushback from the insurance companies. In fact, here in Ocala, we've actually had some of these insurance companies, one in particular, has sent us the $75 for a business tax certificate. And we're like, what do we do with this? Because they proactively felt that it was something that was required. This assessment of $75 per company is really treated as a cost of doing business. They have no way of breaking it down as to how are they going to assess this to the 300 policies they might be issuing. You know, $75 divided by 300 or 1,000, that's what they would have to do, and it's really not worth it to them to go through that mathematical exercise. So very briefly, we're here before you to answer your questions and lay out some options. One is we could pursue a code amendment to add insurance companies as a classification that's subject to the business tax certification. We could do the ordinance and enter into the agreement with the League of Cities so that they do all of the legwork for that first year. Or we could make no amendments at all. So I'm here to answer your questions.
Mr. Mayor.
You know, this is the third time this has come before us. And there's really nothing different here than it was before, other than it's not based on the amount of policies you sell. I think before it was depending, the money was depending on how many policies you sold. This is just another $75 tax for someone to pay. It makes no sense at all. It's not the job of government, but this city, to level the playing field in the marketplace, which is what you just said. Let me finish. And then it's like, well, we're just adding, you know, $75 just the cost of business, cost of doing business. Those agents that the companies represent, they're already licensed. I've already paid money to the state of Florida to do business in the state of Florida. I've already paid you an occupational tax. Where I'm already licensed to do business in the city of Ocala. Now I'm going to give you another $75 just to do business in the city. I mean, that makes no sense whatsoever for us to take money from insurance companies because they're doing business. I mean, why don't we do it with why don't we go over to Seminole Feed and say, look, you know, whatever product they're selling, we're going to start taxing that because they're, you know, from out of town, they're doing business here. Why don't we go over to Cheney Brothers and say every can of Campbell's tomato soup that you sell, or every grocery store, we're going to tax, you know, Publix, you know, 2 cents on all that. I mean, it makes no sense. Why would we do this?
We don't have the authority to charge a tax for out of city limits businesses other than for insurance companies. And the reason why we're able to do this is if you are a State Farm agent, yes, sir, and you have an office in the city, that $75 fee has been paid. But if I go online to buy an insurance product from a State Farm agent who's located in Topeka, that the State Farm insurance company has not paid the business tax. They could, if they had paid the $75 business tax, then they're paying the same fees that the local agents are. The local agents, it is leveling the playing field. And at my very core, sir,
to level the playing field?
At my very core, what I have to do every day with every question I'm asked is treat everyone fairly and equitably. And
level the playing field. It's not the city's job to level the playing field.
It's my job to treat everyone equally.
But that's not government's role. Life's not equal. Life's not fair. It's not our job to make it fair.
It is my job to apply all of the rules equally.
It's not the job of the government to make it fair.
I asked staff to put this on the agenda today for two reasons. The previous two times, there were a lot more questions than there were answers, and I thought we had a duty to bring those answers to you. Secondly, as you know, we're facing a $7 to $8 million deficit in the general fund, a pretty significant, sizable deficit. And staff has championed numerous means of trying to close that deficit with cost savings, reducing expenditures, achieving economies of scales. Of course, that's only one side of the equation. The other side is the revenue side. And this is a established revenue by state statute with a viable collection process. And we brought it before you because this is another tool that we could use to help close that deficit gap.
Why don't we have a city income tax? It's ridiculous.
How many agents do we have currently paying the 75 that reside within the city? Do you know that? How many licenses are issued? Because I would question the numbers. I don't think there's 300 agents or 400 agents within the city limits. Now, granted, we represent multiple insurance companies, so maybe that's how you arrived at that number. I don't know how that number of 300 to 400 companies came about. But to the mayor's point, we pay the $75, we pay a fee to the insurance company. And yes, you're right, they're not going to take $75 and divide it amongst it, but they have other expenses that are relating to it, so that's going to increase our cost of getting licensed for all these companies. And as it is right now, they're getting very tight with making sure that you write a certain amount of policies during the year. So that may risk the companies that we want to work with and have out there, and they're going to drop our license because of something like that. I know it's an insignificant amount, but it still adds up.
Yeah, I question the 300 to 400 companies as well, but that's the experience of the League of Cities.
So if it's less than that and we're looking at $20,000, how much staff time has been spent to try and recoup $20,000 against $7 or $8 million? It's not even a drop in the bucket.
The 300 to 400 number came from the League of Cities. That's their experience in researching the companies doing business within the average municipality. We have approximately 150 agents within the city, representing multiple lines of companies.
So we each represent two, then you're at your 300 number then.
The question is, what do we want to do? Just because we got to wrap it up today, we got to figure out a plan of attack, which way we want to go with this. I, for one, need a little bit more time to think about it. I want to look at what other municipalities are doing. I don't like taxes just for the sake of having a tax. That being said, I still want a little time to look at it.
Council leads and staff follows, so let us know what information we can bring you, how we can help you in this, and we'll be happy to do it.
Right now there's three of us here, and without Jay and Ms. Ridge, I think we'd be better off.
Oh, absolutely.
And maybe we could have some independent private staff time also
maybe go over the issue too. I don't think we need another work meeting for
Let us visit with you one-on-one. Yeah, I mean, go over it. Yeah. Happy to.
Yeah, just know that I'm going to veto that if you do it. But, you know, if you can override it, I'll definitely veto that one.
Okay. Well, you know, let's have our discussion and find out everything we can about it.
Absolutely.
Make our decisions.
Absolutely.
Anything else?
No, thank you.
All right. Okay. We're done.
Right here. A rubber stamp.
Yeah, I have a rubber stamp. Okay.
I beg your pardon.
How's your little
daughter? Yeah. My daughter.
Oh, she's doing good.